Stay in touch with us on Facebook and Instagram at Unique Yet Connected.
You are now listening to episode 34 of Unique Yet Connected podcast. The theme for this episode is, oh my, is one of us codependent or am I the codependent one? Hello, brilliant souls in and around the world. Nolita Tosafentwan is my name. Tolokazi is my clan name. And this is episode 34. A warm welcome to Unique Yet Connected podcast, where we treat our episodes as mini workshops so we can best share the wisdom of systemic family constellations. Thank you for joining our movement of translating this wisdom into a practical language that all of us can easily understand, and most importantly, implement in our daily lives. The theme for this episode is, oh my, is one of us codependent or am I the codependent one? Remember, when you comment, ask questions, like and share our content and links, you help us grow together. And there wouldn't be a podcast without you, myself, Kinga, Nick, the ones who came before us, and Bert Hellinger, the founder of the work that is most fulfilling for Kinga and I. And as always, Kinga is on the other side of the virtual. Hi, Kings.
Hello. Thank you, Noli. Hello, dear listeners and editors. Yes, dear listeners, keep sharing this knowledge because it can change life for the better. Thank you for your huge contribution. You are inspiration in building and opening up the theme about the laws of love and romantic relationships. Please continue to share your questions, comments, and insights on uniqueyetconnected@gmail.com and on WhatsApp 076-289-6670. Join our monthly virtual connection circles every last Tuesday evening of the month. To receive your link, subscribe on our website www.uniqueyetconnected.com or check for updates on our socials at uniqueyetconnected.
Yes, Kings, they can simply drop us a message on WhatsApp so we can share the link with them. Again, our WhatsApp number is 076-289-6670. And we are still in the relationship and romance chapter. Take it away, Kings.
Yes, we finished our last episode with a note that there is a difference between being dependent and dependency. The natural development stage of a relationship only turns into dependency when you carry on holding on to the codependent stage beyond the natural end of that stage. Dependency is created when we stop our emotional development. A relationship rarely survives when one person is ready to move to the next development stage and learn a new, higher level of being dependent on each other. And the other one wants to stay in the previous stage, and with that stopping growth and creating dependency issues. As promised, in this episode, we will look into how to recognize that if you or your partner is stuck in codependency.
Yes, it's going to be another revealing episode. I have a feeling about that. And what is our quote, Kings, for this episode?
So for this team, actually, we have more than one. But just let's start with one from C. Jobel C. Okay, here it comes. Life is too short to waste any amount of time on wondering what other people think about you. In the first place, if they had better things going on in their lives, they wouldn't have the time to sit around and talk about you. What is important to me is not others' opinion of me. But what's important to me is my opinion of myself.
Yeah, that one is hitting differently. And it is so true, Kings. And why are we addicted to other people's opinions of us? What are some of the root causes of that?
When our healthy identity development is interrupted, when we are constantly told or made to feel that something is not okay with us, it results in that we cannot possibly know who we really are. Our opinion about ourselves is based on what we believe is other people's opinion about us. In our heart, we feel that we are lovable and unique, but we were trained by the people who should have loved us the most that something is not okay with us. This flawed picture started to be formed in us when we were quite little. The negative picture of ourselves was created because we were not loved for who we are, and we're constantly shaped and fixed by other people into our more lovable version.
This takes me to when I was growing up, Kings. My mom loved to bring out my baby photo just for fun, you know, and I hated that photo with everything that I had. And I didn't like that my mom used to like teasing me about it. And she would say, one day you would love this photo. And we ended up losing the photo during our moving from one place to another. And right now, I do wish I still had it. So yeah, she was right. And the reason why I hated the photo was because of how I looked. I looked like a mixture of an Asian-African cocktail, if there's ever such a thing. And I had no hair. And everyone who saw that photo made a comment that I didn't look like a black baby. So I have no idea how black babies are supposed to look like. And now that I'm older, I've seen black babies without hair. So that was such a myth at that time. And apparently, no one in my family had seen a baby like me. And even my dad asked my mom if there was no possible mix-up of babies at the hospital. So I guess my dad and his family kind of forgot about the other genes in the family system. And they were busy questioning my looks. So I was like, okay, these people, how easily they can forget. And that experience of my mom taking out that photo all the time made me feel so uncomfortable and self-conscious of how different and weird I was. I would be very upset with my mom, and she wouldn't understand because she makes fun of everything. And those opinions about how I looked stuck with me. It took my mom a while to really understand how much I didn't like her bringing out the baby photo. As I started school, there were also other adults I encountered who made me feel that it wasn't okay to be me. And once again, I took their opinions in. Throughout my life, the opinion of others mattered, and that became my limitation until I started doing the inner work.
If you remember when you kept on asking about the root cause in the previous episode, I didn't answer you because I wanted to get to not being loved for who we are because it is the main root cause. We felt not loved by the ones who mattered to us most. We were made to feel that something is wrong with us. Even if making us feel like this was not the intention of the adult, the damage was already done and we would still carry the hurt with us into our adulthood. As an adult, we tend to forget that the way our mind interprets the world also goes through a development, and up to about 7 years of age, we live in a different reality than we live after. Before 7 years of age, whatever a child hears, he takes it at face value as the truth. The adults might be just joking that you don't look like any of us, but for the child it means I don't belong. How can I belong if I don't look like anyone in my family? Children want to be like the rest of the family. They don't want to be different. If you are told that you are different, there is a very big hurt. It also adds to the anxiety of the child that when children are around 5 or 6 years old, they often think that they were adopted and don't belong to their family. From the beginning, you were made to feel like you don't look like the people in your family. The belief of being adopted is further confirmed. Another root cause of believing in other people's opinion more than we believe in ours, and this can be a very, very big factor, is if there was a person in the family whose moods and behavior kind of run the whole family, and you always have to be careful that this person is in a good mood. One example of an alcoholic as a parent. What happens is that everyone, including you, are constantly on the lookout of how the air colleague feels and how he is going to come home.
Yes, I know that one very well of the alcoholic and how they feel and how they're going to come home.
Yeah, what mood he is in. Some alcoholics just go to sleep, then you have the hurt of an absent person or father. Some alcoholics, they get violent. If this is your father, you try to gather your clues of how to react to him by looking at your mom's reactions. Mom is looking at how her husband, your father, is. Everyone in the family ends up looking at what is happening with dad. What mood he is he in? Is he okay? This makes the child to always be looking outside and never have time to turn inside and look at what is happening inside me. What are my needs? What do I want? What mood am I in? Am I okay to be in this mood? There is no space for that. Being so focused on another person's wound is one of the most typical background reasons on how you end up being a codependent person.
Yeah, you mentioned things that affected my childhood. My mom was a prankster and the jokester of note, and she should have been a comedian, you know. We were so different because she's the kind of person who doesn't take things in as I do. It took her a long time to understand how sensitive I am. When the photo thing came up in my teenage years, because we were working through my issues, and for the life of her, she couldn't understand my kind of sensitivity. And I was the one who was saying, I'm not like you, I am me, you know, and I had to fight for that. And then in my preschool years, I looked like my dad, which in my coding meant that I was ugly because I looked like a man and I wanted to look like my beautiful mom. And I only realized later in life that my dad was handsome, but it didn't matter at that stage because I didn't feel pretty at all.
I'm smiling because I was also told that I look just like my dad. I don't look like my mom's family at all. The story was always about how my mom and her three sisters were so beautiful that the dance at the balls wouldn't start before they arrived.
Oh, Kings, I feel your pressure. That must have been the mother of all pressures.
And you are a girl, and you keep on hearing that.
How does a young girl who looks like dad live up to that? Yeah, it's,
You're like, oh, maybe I'm ugly. I was smiling because it is a very similar story we share.
Yes, Kings. You also spoke about the alcoholic father. And my dad was an alcoholic. And his pattern when I was younger was that he would come back drunk and pass out either on the couch or bedroom. And the struggle of having to wake him up from the couch, especially when there were visitors coming, he got violent when I was in my teens, but that whole anxiety was too much, including picking up my mom's anxiety of how is my dad going to show up, you know, family function or when we're just going out as a family. But the biggest anxiety was when I was a learner in his school and he would show up with his red eyes and wouldn't be able to get up from the couch in the morning so we could go to school together. The love I had for him in the midst of all that and how his alcoholism broke my heart over and over again. And I think his behavior escalated my mom's independence to being super independent, which took on too.
But just again, not being loved for who we are and not feeling safe enough to have time to get to know ourselves are two big root causes of ending up as a codependent person. Codependency normally starts very early. It can start as early as infancy. Your parents were expecting a boy and you happen to be a girl or vice versa. Already from the beginning of your life, you feel like you are not good enough. Who you are is fundamentally wrong. Then let's take another scenario when there is a child who passed away before you. Your parents will grieve for this child and even if they are happy that you have arrived, you're still gonna feel that on some level, your duty is to try to replace this child. But you are not that child, never gonna be that child. And from the beginning of your life, you start off as not being good enough because you are not him and never will be him. Even if you have the most loving parents who are totally in love with you, you will still have a high chance of carrying this feeling. I'm telling you this from experience because I have seen it in many constellations that the surviving child wants to live his life for the child who passed away. The solution of this life-limiting loyalty is to turn the living for into living in honor of. Then the late sibling has his own life and fate, and the surviving one has his. Then I mentioned another one, a life-altering situation, is when we are separated from our mom in the first 7 years of our life. This causes us on a certain level to feel disconnected from our mom. This disconnection is called interrupted reaching out movement. This disconnection can originate from many different life events. For example, mom had postnatal depression, baby being put into an incubator after birth, a hospital stay in the first 7 years of our lives, or being left with relatives to raise us, which is quite common as we know in our country. In a constellation, that movement that needs to be finished can be completed, and with that, the connection between mom and child would be recreated.
This is so eye-opening. Here's something else that's coming up. So when I was 5 years old, my brother arrived, and he is the perfect baby. Everyone is excited. You know, he's a boy. My dad talks about him before he is even born. He gives him his late, so he gives him his late uncle's name that he was close with and loved very much. And I'm observing this, and not that they don't love me, but it's intriguing to me, you know. And when he finally arrives, he's like this beautiful baby. He's cutest thing that everyone has ever seen since me, you know, like, yeah. And I was an alien, I mean, you know, so now here's this perfect baby with hair and everything as the expectation. So I'm watching their excitement, and I didn't like this baby who gets to have and steals the show. You know, so my mom says, but my brother was like still very little and crawling. He would crawl towards me as a baby, and we were toddlers and just playing around. And my mom's like, he would crawl, you know, looking for your attention and gets next to you because he knew you're the sister. And so my mom is like, you never even looked at him. You didn't want him next to you. And he was also another thing. He also looked like my mom. And everyone would say, this baby looks like your mom. And there I was looking like my dad, wishing I looked like my mom.
Just again, on top of that, most of the children, when they are 5 or 6 years old, have the theory that they are probably adopted and they are not in the right family. And in your case, this child arrives and you definitely see that this child is part of the family. You know this child definitely belongs, but you are not sure that you belong. The adoption myth in the child happens because when you are 5 or 6 years old, you start to catch on with reality. You used to think that your mother and father know everything, the most clever and special people on the planet. There is no one else like them, which is actually true. There is no one else like them. When you catch them out, that they don't know everything or they make a mistake suddenly, they fall from the pedestal you put them on. This is when the child starts to think that I am also clever. I am so clever. Actually, I'm cleverer than my parents. I can't belong to these people. They can't be the big ones for me.
Oh, Kings, that makes me laugh so much because I can relate to that. So during the whole pregnancy with my brother, at first my mom pretends that nothing is going on with her tummy. She just gained weight. But everyone is commenting about a baby in her tummy in my presence. So That's when I caught her. I mean, maybe that's the first lie that I caught her in. And I was thinking, you really think I don't know there's a baby in there? But then I wasn't allowed to say anything like that. Then there's talks that she is going to the hospital to have the baby. And she goes away and then she comes back with no baby, but her tummy is still huge. So I'm like, where's the baby? And there was the child that asked so many questions. She was like, no, I didn't manage to find the baby. Her story was that she was buying the baby. And I was like, how does this process really work? And I'm like, what's up with your stomach? And she says, it's worms. And they couldn't take them out. And then I'm thinking inside, are you serious? Are you really serious, mom? And she finally comes back with the baby in her second round from the hospital and maintains the story that she bought the baby. And I'm like, for who? You know, the baby looks like you, you know? And I'm just trying to connect all these things in my mind because I didn't know how it happens. You know, I just couldn't believe that my mom lied to me like that. And I knew partly what was going on.
Yes, good example. So I would like to read another quote, if I may. We don't have to take rejection as a reflection of our self-worth. If somebody who is important, or even someone unimportant to you, rejects you or your choices, you are still real. And you are still worth every bit as much as you would be if you had not been rejected. Feel any feelings that go with rejection. Talk about your thoughts, but don't forfeit your self-esteem to another's disapproval or rejection of who you are or what have you done. Even if the most important person in your world rejects you, you are still real and you are still okay. If you have done something inappropriate or you need to solve a problem or change a behavior, then take appropriate steps to take care of yourself. But don't reject yourself and don't give so much power to other people's rejection of you. It isn't necessary. By Melody Beattie.
Oh, how I wish I knew this one when I was younger and fully understood it then. That part that says, but don't reject yourself, struck me because, wow, I've rejected myself so many times. Does this mean that if we give the rejection power, it can end up consuming us to a point that we can reject ourselves?
Until you do some work on being perfectly happy and in tune with who you are, you will constantly reject your real self. Actually, you don't even really know who you are. So your first rejection starts with not wanting to get to know the real you. In my mind, the biggest rejection of yourself is when you feel so unworthy of attention that you don't give the time and love to get to know the awesome person you actually are. This happens when you turn your back to the parts in you that you were told are not lovable, going back to just, you know, to the beginning. The truth is that your greatly celebrated tendencies could be the ones that hold you back in experiencing the real you. Is it a lot for the hero who constantly saves the day to be saved by someone? The mascot who makes it her mission to lift other people's mood to be fed?
Yeah, this resonates because it took me a while to start accepting myself, feeling worthy of my attention and love in getting to know the awesome person that I truly am. I even started going back to things that brought me joy as a child. I'm also listening to music that moved and grew my soul as a child, even though I didn't understand the lyrics. But what comes through as I listen to them now is that I always knew what set my soul on fire. And that last part, when you asked, is it allowed for the mascot who makes it her mission or his mission to lift other people's mood to be sad, makes me think about the comedians in my family, my mom and uncle, whom I feel love to laugh and joke about everything and a whole lot more than others. Maybe there was sadness and the laughter was their escape. But I did pick up sadness from my mom. Remember when we did the virtual session, Kings, in the connection circle?
Yes, I remember. When we talk about the roles we take on, we are actually talking about something that is linked to development. The reason I brought in the roles of a hero or the mascot in our conversation, because they help us understand how we identify with the role and forget about how deep and multifaceted we actually are. How do we end up taking on the role of a mascot like your mom? Let's say there is a constant tension or sadness between the parents, and the child learns that when I'm funny, I lift the mood, it breaks the tension, and everyone feels better. You will see that with someone who took on the role of a mascot when they were a child, and that is the role they play in life, when they get into an emotionally difficult situation, they burst out in this almost crazy laughter. I've seen it in Constellation many times, the mascots, when it gets a little bit feels tight emotionally, they start to laugh. They don't know any other response that is accepted by the family from them. So they start playing their part to laugh when there is too much tension. That is why I'm asking if it's okay to be sad. But we could also ask, is it okay for the peacemaker to be angry?
Exactly, yeah, for the peacemaker to be angry. That is the most important question as well, because that's exactly what happened to my mom when, as a peacemaker, she got angry and it shocked the whole family. So I guess it wasn't okay. Others were disappointed in her. So yeah, and she felt a little guilty afterwards, I must say. I also recognized the hero savior role in myself because of the situation with my dad, and trying to be there for my mom and brother to make things better in the family somehow as a child, and also taking on other responsibilities in the home.
And that will also comes out in the choice of our relationship. Often a hero is going to get together with the princess who needs to be constantly saved from the castle. We force ourselves to live up to our role, but then we complain about the situation we ended up in. Why? Because we have taken on a role when we were only little, and this role is too big for us. We can never grow into an imaginary quality. If you happen to be a knight in a shining armor, there is no way you will willingly put on that armor without some work. But even the most mighty knight needs someone's help from time to time. Am I right?
Yes, you're very right, Kings. And the key matches the keyhole, as you always say.
Yes. If you are the rock for the family, that means that you can never be done. You always have to be the one who holds everything together. Let's make a note here to talk about the roles we take on as a child and how we bring them into our relationship. And that is the key and the keyhole. We will talk about this at a later stage. In the systemic view, the child who has become the rock for the family carries an enormous amount of undue responsibility. This person will feel overburdened with responsibilities. To free himself, the responsibility that belonged to the adults who raised him must be given back to them. Even though this sounds like an easy thing to do and something we wish for, a lot of people struggle to let go of the overwhelm because they don't trust that the problems will be taken care of if they stop trying to control them.
There is so much that poured out of me this episode and unexpectedly, and I'm so grateful. And dear listener, let us know what came up for you from your childhood. This is where we end this episode. Kings, what can we expect in episode 35?
The next episode is leading us to the signs of codependent behavior. We're gonna read the list by Erica Sweeney. And just again, if you feel like you are experiencing limiting patterns or relationship issues and would like to have an individual session, book a family constellation session with us on our website, www.uniqueyetconnected.com, or on our socials, Facebook or Instagram. Our handle on both platforms is at Unique Yet Connected.
And once again, thank you for listening to our 34th episode. And another big thank you to Nick Mons from That Guy Productions for making us sound fabulous and on point. Our 35th episode is in 2 weeks from now. Tune in on the 12th of November at 10 a.m. South African Standard Time. We look forward to hearing from you. Like our pages, engage with us on Facebook or Instagram at Unique Yet Connected. Unique spelled YOUNIQUE. Stay unique, stay connected, and remember, you are one of a kind, and we can only create a really meaningful podcast together. Siyabulela Kamako Kosonom. Till the next episode.
Thank you, Isabella.